The taco. We've all had one, but have you thought about where it came from? Taco City is an exploration of culture, history, and recipes from taqueros, chefs, and restaurateurs all over the world. Everything that goes into that taco on your plate. I'll show you where to find them, from fish tacos off the coast of Alaska to Navajo tacos in the desert of New Mexico, carne asada from the heart of Los Angeles, and everywhere in between. Every week is a new culinary journey, discovering the origins of a food that you can find in every kitchen, town, state, and country, the taco. Welcome to Taco City. Maria Josefa Ortiz Dominguez was born April 19, 1773. Ortiz de Dominguez was the daughter of Don Juan Jose Ortiz, who was a captain, and his wife, Dona Manuela Giron. Ortiz was born in what is now known as Michoacán in Mexico. Ortiz's father was killed during a battle when she was a baby, and her mother died soon after. So her sister, and she actually went to college at the Colegio de las Vizcaínas in 1789. And not long after that, she married Miguel Dominguez, who used to visit her at the college on January 24th, 1791 in Mexico City, which is how she got the Dominguez in her name. So in 1802, Miguel Dominguez was appointed to the office of magistrate in the city of Querétaro. During that time, Josefa took care of their 14 children. Yes, that's right, 14. And she developed an early sympathy for the Amerindian, Mestizo, and the Criollo communities who were being oppressed by the Spaniards who were controlling the government. They were often seen as second-class citizens, and Josefa de Ortiz did not think it was fair. So she created a secret literary society. They actually all existed at that point in different households, but she created her own in the basement of the house of the magistrate, her husband. They got together for these secret literary meetings really to discuss books that had been banned by the Roman Catholic Church at that time and the Spaniards. So they had to do it in secret. And she convinced her husband to come to some of the meetings as well. But very quickly, the meetings turned towards talk of a revolution, which eventually became the Mexican War of Independence. So right around this time, King Ferdinand VII of Spain was overthrown, and it became very clear to Josefa and her husband that if they were going to organize a revolution, that now would be a good time while the Spanish were preoccupied with their own problems. So her house, their house, became the official location of the revolutionary conspiracy, and much of the insurgent planning was happening there, including gathering weapons and supplies and storing them in other houses. So the revolution was planned for December 8th, 1810. But on September 13th of the same year, they were betrayed by one of their supporters who informed the Spaniards about the rebel activities in Querétaro. So the colonials, unaware that it was Dominguez's wife who was organizing everything, asked Dominguez to conduct a search of the town to apprehend the rebel leaders, who ironically were him and his wife. So he imprisoned his wife in her room to keep her from exchanging information and get them in further trouble. Now, being locked in her room was not going to stop Josefa from getting the word out. So she found a way to get to the town mayor, and he warned all of the rebels that they had been ratted out. So they decided that they were going to have to start the revolution early and declared war against the Spanish authorities. And on September 16th of 1810, they started the Mexican War of Independence. Eventually, Josefa and her husband were uncovered for the role they played in the conspiracy, and they were imprisoned separately. She was actually sent to a monastery in Querétaro, and then again to Mexico City. Even though her husband acted as her lawyer and tried to get her free, she was still found guilty, and she was placed in reclusion in a monastery in Santa Teresa. But being locked in a monastery was still not going to stop Josefa. So even while she was there, she still rebelled and spoke out and basically continued to do what she'd done, which was fight for the rights of everyone to be equal. So they ended up transferring her to a different monastery, Santa Catalina de Sena, where she stayed until 1817, where she was released under oath that she would refrain from supporting the rebellion. The Mexican War of Independence ended in 1822, and the Mexican emperor at the time offered Josefa the role of lady-in-waiting for his wife, but she didn't believe in the way that he was running the government and refused the honor. In 1823, she was designated a woman of honor by the empress, which is a tribute she also denounced. Later in her life, Josefa was involved with several radical political groups, so she clearly never stopped trying to make things right. But she always refused any reward for her involvement and argued that she was just doing her duty as a patriot. Josefa died in 1829 in Mexico City. She was originally buried there, but later her remains were moved to Querétaro. And the government of Querétaro declared her Benemérita del Estado, which means worthy of the state. In 1910, Josefa was one of the first two women to be depicted on Mexican stamps, and she was the second woman to be depicted on a stamp in Latin America. She also appeared on a version of the $5 Mexican coin, surrounded by the words Bicentenario de la Independencia, meaning Bicentennial Anniversary of Independence. And she was the first woman to appear on a Mexican coin. Now, Querétaro is located in north-central Mexico in a region known as Bayo. It's one of the smallest states in Mexico, but it's very interesting because the state has varying ecosystems from deserts to tropical rainforest, all within the same state. And it's also where Pobre Diablo, the evil cook, got his start. Alex Garcia, known on Instagram as Pobre Diablo, is a taquero with a unique story. He started his brand first, and the tacos came second. But he's better at telling the story than I am, so let's get to his interview. Alex and his wife came over to Taco City Central, aka my house, to record his interview, and he told me that he was going to bring me some tacos. But what I didn't realize is that he was making them in front of me. So he set up his grill in the kitchen and made me the most delicious carnitas that I can still taste as I recite this. And his habanero salsa, good God. Even the tortillas were made on the spot. They were masa with guajillo chili paste mixed in, and everything melted together like a symphony of flavors, and now I'm drooling. So let's get to the interview. So I'm here with Alex Garcia, who's better known on Instagram as
Pobre Diablo.
Thanks so much for sitting down with me. First thing I want you to tell me is about your earliest food memory. Like, what's a food memory that you have growing up that you think of like fondly?
Even she's laughing about it because every time I talk about my childhood, I go back when I was 5 years old, and everyone's knows this. Like, my first memory with food probably was, I was seven, I can say, and it's enchiladas. We used to gather in my grandparents' house, and we used to cook everyone together. And I remember that day I ate like 10 enchiladas. At that age was like a lot. So I start picking and I start yelling, "I'm picking blood," and I was all scared, and everyone started making fun of me, and they were like, "No, it's because you ate too many enchiladas." So probably that's my memory. And as now, my favorite dish is enchiladas.
That's funny because, like, I got sick when I was younger. I got sick from watermelon, and it wasn't the watermelon's fault. I think I just ate too much. But I didn't eat watermelon for a long time, like 10 years. And after a while, I realized, okay, it's okay. So I'm surprised that you were like, whatever, I'm going to keep eating enchiladas.
Until now, I'm in love with enchiladas.
Where was that at? What part of LA did you grow up in?
Actually, I born in Mexico.
What part?
Querétaro. It's a state in the middle of the country. nobody knows about that state that much because it's a really big city, like a lot of industrial work and everything. So nobody has that need to come to the United States.
So central, so like north of Mexico City?
It's 2 hours from Mexico City.
2 hours north?
Yes.
Okay. So growing up, like, where do you get your love of food and cooking from?
To be honest, I'm going back with my roots. Like, my family, both of the sides are bakers. My dad and my mom, like, everyone bakes until these days. And I was, like, the rebel. I was like, no, I don't want to bake. I want to do something else. But eventually, I fell in love with cooking. And all my cooking doesn't come from my grandmother, to be honest. It comes because of my aunt. She got sick. And when that happened, I started doing meals for her because she wasn't able to get up from the bed. So I was like, this is what I want to do. And even before she died, she told me, like, you're really good at this, so you have to do it. So that stayed in my head, like, I want to do it.
I mean, it's a cool story, and it's great that, like, if she put that pressure on you, you're like, now I have to do this thing that I'm... I feel the same way about baking. Like, I like to eat things that are baked goods, but baking is such an exact science, and cooking is, like, a little of this and a little of that, and if you screw up, you can try and compensate with something else. And I've screwed up with baking before. I rarely screw up with cooking.
And not too long ago, I went to see my dad. He lives in TJ. And he gave me his recipe book. He's been doing that for years. He used to perfect every recipe. So he was like, here, mijo, do it. And I know you can do it. And I was like, no, I don't want it. I don't want to bake. I like to put a dash of this, dash of that, and make it mine. I don't want to measure everything.
Yeah, exactly. So we talked about this. You cater and you do a lot of pop-ups, and you're like a taco rock band.
Yeah,
that's how you describe it.
Back in the day when I was in high school, I used to play in a band, and I used to play the bass, so I was into all the rock scene and everything. But I had to work in the restaurant business because, to be honest, back in the day I didn't have my papers. So it was the only job I could get. So that stayed in my mind. Like, I want to be in a rock band, but I have to work. So this is our concept now. Like, we're like a rock band, and we're doing pop-ups everywhere. Like, we just like to appear everywhere and cook for everyone.
Well, it's cool because you're like an artist, like a singing or like a band, where you're like, today we're going to be here. Next week we're going to be at this place. We're going to be at this place. And so you never know where it's going to be. But I like that you get to change your location all the time, and that you're kind of spreading, like, your tacos around to all different parts of not just LA, but like you said, you're going to Mexico.
Yeah, next month we're going to Mexico, and we're going to do a pop-up dinner over there, 4-course menu. And I think it's going to be fun because a lot of the chefs that I am going to do it with, I don't know them personally. We just know each other because of Instagram. But everything's going on very smooth, so everything's going to be great.
What part of Mexico are you doing that in?
We're doing it in Querétaro.
Very cool. Tell me about the name of the business and, like, how you came up with the name and the Evil Cook and, like, the persona and the way you've branded yourself.
We name it Evil Cooks because actually we start, like, backwards. We start doing shirts, hats, all this gear, and then we decide, you know what, let's make food too with that name. So the name comes because back in the day they used to call me Diablo, and that stayed with me, like, forever. So I was like, something related to Diablo, it's evil, and I'm a cook, so I'm gonna be like the evil cook. And so that stayed with the brand too, like Evil Cooks. Like, everywhere wants to be cool in the kitchen, and they're kind of evil sometimes. So I think it fits perfect.
So you were selling the t-shirts and the merchandise before you were, like, doing pop-ups and cooking. So yes. At that point, like, were you just selling it as a, like, kind of as a brand? Like, here's some cool stuff.
Yeah, we wanted to do you some cool shirts that I draw myself, like, for everyone. Like, everyone needs something different. They want to stand out of the crowd.
It's so cool. I don't think I've ever met anybody that came in it backwards, like, that you did it that way. But I know that Balam Taco, who you did a you cooked for their third anniversary with them. He was because he was an art design student, he designs all their shirts too, and that's like a second thing for him. Like, he loves the creative part of the taqueria, but
probably that's why me and Chendo get along really good. Yeah. So probably that's why.
What do you consider? Do you have a taco that you consider your signature taco? Like, you make a lot of different things. For instance, you just made me some amazing tacos from pork, and it was guajillo chili in the tortilla. Do you have one thing that you feel like if you did a job for somebody and they said you pick, but we just want one type of taco, what would you choose?
I like the question. Like, sometimes it's hard for some people, but I know what I want to do. Like if somebody told me, like, it's your last day and you want to cook the last taco for somebody, I know what I want to cook. I think the chorizo verde is our signature dish. Like, you have to try it. That way you can say, okay, you're right. But yeah, I'm very confident with our green chorizo.
How often do you do it? Do you work it into...
The green chorizo, I haven't done it, but we're going to start doing it for every pop-up. And back in last 2 months, yeah, July, we did like a big batches of green chorizo and sell it by pound.
Oh, nice.
And everything through Instagram.
Yeah, that's awesome. So you've totally utilized social media, for the most part, Instagram.
Yes.
In your business. Like, have you seen over the last few years, has it changed for you? Has it gotten better, harder, easier? To market yourself on Instagram?
I think right now, with the time we gain a lot of followers, it's been a lot easier. Like, some people share this, and other people share that. So a lot of people start looking at us, like, putting their eyes on our social media, and that helps a lot with our business.
Yeah, it's like when people talk about, like, I want to go viral, and you're like, you can't just go viral. You just have
you have to work.
It's like weird timing. Like, the right person has to see something that you post, and maybe they have a million followers or like 100,000, and they share your stuff, and then it just starts to snowball into something bigger.
Yes.
What drives you? What keeps you cooking and doing this?
That's a really hard question. I never got that question before, but I think that something really keeps me going is that I want to be happy, and this cooking thing makes me happy. So that's, like I tell people, and even my wife told me, don't say that. I don't want to be rich. I want to be happy. I want to cook because cooking makes me happy. That's what drives me. Like,
I mean, yeah, it'd be nice as a sidebar to be rich. Like, that.
Cool. Yeah,
but yeah,
it helps.
No, it's, yeah. Well, and like, that love comes in, like, you can taste it in the food. You can tell when somebody's cooking because they love cooking versus somebody who's cooking because they just for money.
Exactly.
What's the biggest challenge for you? What's the hardest part about what you do? Between the merchandise and the cooking?
About that, it's not that much challenge, but I can talk about, like, back in last year, a really big challenge for me was the communication because of my English wasn't that good. So here in the United States, you have to speak English to communicate with people. And it was a challenge right there, but eventually I start losing my tongue a little bit, so I can communicate a little bit more.
Your English is great. But I can see where that's really hard. Even for me, the other way around, if I have to speak Spanish, like, I understand where I'm like, okay, I can get a little bit, or I can pick up some, or I can speak just enough to ask a question, but then not understand. And English is like the hardest language in the world to learn.
And sometimes they ask me, why you don't speak like good English, because you've been here already for like 18 years. But when you work in the kitchen, you work with a lot of Mexican people, Hispanic people.
Right.
And the only language you use is Spanish. So you don't practice English that much.
Right. Was there ever a time that you wanted to quit?
Never.
Never?
I am never going to quit.
Do you think, so tacos are really, really popular. They've been popular for a couple of years, but like, now they're the new hamburger. Like, every place I go in the United States, like, there's tacos, and there's good tacos in places that I didn't know would have them. Do you think because of how popular they are, has that helped your business? Or do you just see that the people that that you serve to are going to be there whether tacos are a thing or not?
I think right now it helps a lot that a lot of people are doing that. So the people are like, oh, look, tacos, let's have some tacos, some gourmet tacos, something different than the street tacos. But to be honest, I never choose to make tacos. I don't know why I end up doing tacos. Because when I started in the business, I started like cooking French, Italian, Japanese, Chinese, all the cooking you can name. And my idea was like, I want to become a fine dining chef. Because I was working in a lot of fine dining restaurants. So I was like, I want to do something according to fine dining. But no, I ended up doing tacos. I went back to my roots. Like I used heard some chef from Mexico, Enrique Olvera, that he say when you go back to your roots, that's when you find the right way to go. So I think right now that I fall again in my roots, like I feel like everything is easier and people, who doesn't love tacos?
Yeah, I know. I feel like it gets a little out of hand sometimes where people will put things or it'll be something they'll say it's a taco. And I'm like, no, that's not a taco. But usually if there's no tortilla, then you can't call it that. I've seen some ridiculous things in them, but I think it's kind of cool that like you can go get a taco that's made with like Chef Wes Zegaria with sweet potato and uni. But you can also like, especially in LA, walk a block away and get a taco with al pastor that is like very traditional.
What I like to do is something traditional, but make it appeal it to people. Like we still want to keep the traditional flavors on it. Like for example, like I do cochinita and I like to keep the same recipe as my stepdad gave me. Like he's been carrying that recipe for 4 generations. So I want to keep it traditional and I just put my touch when it comes to plate the taco.
I tried to make cochinita pibil tacos once and I need to do it again because it's one of those things where I'm like, this doesn't look that hard. It's so difficult. And to get it right, it's like making tortillas from scratch.
Yeah.
You know, it's like 2 ingredients. It's masa and water, if you just like basically, but it's, is the ratio right? How much moisture is in the air today? Like, are you pressing it correctly? Is it, and like I've screwed them up more than I've made them correctly. Cochinita pibil is the same way. Like I finished and I'm like, it doesn't look right. It still tasted good because I just took pork and cooked it for a long period of time and banana leaves, but it wasn't right. So I felt like, oh, I have to make this like 15, 20 times before.
I think for cochinita pibil, all you have to do is have patience and time. That's it.
Like mole.
Yeah, just like mole. Mole, you need 3 days to make it. Just time.
I was watching The Final Table on Netflix, which is that chef competition show. And they had the chef from Pujol.
Okay.
And he was talking about the mother's mole that they serve. And it's aged like 600 days or something.
Yeah.
Like, and you just put it back on the stove. I think I found the recipe. You like make the mole and you cook it. And then every day you put it back on for like an hour or two. And then every 3 to 4 days you add a little bit more mole paste. Yeah. And then you go back and you put it on and you just keep doing that.
What they're doing is basically what you do in baking. Like you have the masa madre that make you make more masas. They do the same thing. They have their mole madre and take some of that and make a new one.
Which is really cool because it's like aged cheese. Like I never thought of mole as being aged.
Yeah, it's something like blew your mind when you see it.
Do you, when you get your ingredients, do you have to go, like I often ask, and sometimes I'll get a chef that's like in Alaska or I talk to somebody in Australia. And when I ask them about getting Mexican ingredients, it's really hard when you're not in LA because we're so spoiled here. Do you have any special place that you go to get the stuff that you cook with?
To be honest, no. Sometimes you find everything in the Mexican markets, but sometimes I go to the farmer's market, walk around, and if you see something, you say, oh, I can do this with that. No, I don't have a specific place to buy.
Yeah, we're fortunate to have carne asadillas. Like the one closest to me is 2 blocks away. I just walk there. And then, like, what am I going to make today? What do they have? What vegetables do they have? And then when we were back east, my wife's 1 year, I was like, where's the closest carniceria? And Google Maps was like 68 miles. I'm like, no.
The only thing I'm special with is the masa that I use to make like handmade tortillas. Because it's really hard to find the right flavor for the tortillas. you don't want to use Maseca. You don't want to use like prepackaged.
Because it's like buying prepackaged tortillas. There like you go. When you're, yeah, if you're getting mission.
You want to get something really good, really close to the flavors that you find in Mexico.
Okay, so you're doing an event. The reason that you're on the show today is because I can't come to the event to see you on December 15th. Talk about you cooking tacos for the women's shelter.
December 15th, we're going to be giving free tacos for everyone who loves tacos. Yes, free tacos. Sereno Park in L.A. We're going to be getting blankets, toys, and...
toiletry
for the women and children's shelter in Boyle Heights. It's called Dolores Mission, and we want to give to those people like some kind of happiness these days, because we all deserve to be happy on Christmas Day. So we want to everyone who can donate, can come, drop something, and maybe you can make a kid happy that day.
How long, what time are you there from?
We're going to be there from 5 to until we get
until cold. You run out?
Until we get cold. Yeah, we're going to be there for a long time. Probably we're going to be there till 1 in the morning if we need to.
I'll put the flyer. If you go find the Instagram post for this episode, I'll make sure that the flyer's on there so people can see where the address is at. It's like such an awesome thing to do, especially a week before Christmas or 10 days before Christmas.
And we want to do this because, to be honest, when we came here, me and my mom and my sister, we ran away from Mexico because we were victims of violence, domestic violence. So we want to help the people that it's going through the same thing.
Well, it's very cool that you're giving back.
Yes.
So tell me about Pueblo Diablo in the future. Like, what do you see? Do you have a 5-year plan? Like, where do you see the taco making and the merchandise in the next 5 years?
In the next 5 years, we want to ship to the whole world. We want to get to those people who are in the other side of the world. Like, if they like our merchandise, hopefully someday they can get it. And as Pobre Diablo, I see myself like doing the same thing, cooking. But probably in the future, we've been thinking like a food truck or something like that. Because a lot of people, they like to have restaurants, and I don't like to wait for people. I like to go and look for people. So probably a food truck.
Oh, man, you could just get a truck that you could live in. You could just travel across all the United States.
To be honest, that's exactly what we were saying. Like, we just got a van, and we were like, well, we don't go a road trip. Like, every state, we stop, and we can cook tacos. Probably someday we can do that, too.
Because we have both dogs and... especially the pup, the smaller one is hard to fly with. So we drive. The last 2 years, we drive all the way back to New Jersey from here. We try and take like our time, like, okay, we're only going to drive 8 to 10 hours today. And then every day at lunchtime, we try and find a taqueria to stop at. No matter where we are in the country, there's always at least one good place. We were in Oklahoma in the middle of nowhere, and I stopped at this little restaurant, and there was like, I didn't see anybody in the parking lot. I'm like, I hope this place is legit. I walked in, and there was a Hispanic family having a birthday party, and they were the only people in there. And I'm like, oh yeah, I think this place is going to be good. I told my wife, like, why aren't we in a roving Taco City van, like RV where we're sleeping in it? And I just go interview people and we drive across the United States.
That should be.
We just follow your truck.
Let's do it.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being on the show this week.
Thank you for having us here.
Yeah, we've been trying to hook up for, I feel like it's been a year.
Yeah, almost a year.
Awesome. You can find Alex on Instagram as Pobre Diablo. It's spelled Pobre.Diablo. And he has a second account at evil_cooks. And those are both on Instagram. The best place to find out where he's going to be next and eat his tacos, which you should do if you're in LA, is to follow him on Instagram, because he's great at updating his current tour and where he's hitting up. And stuff updates like on the fly. So, you know, turn on notifications, keep track of him. He's all over the place. and DM him for shirts and hats. I will be wearing mine this week as I drive across the country. Well, I will try to get you a regular Taco City episode out next week. I'm leaving Thursday this week to drive across the U.S. to New Jersey for the holidays with my wife Allison's family. I should be there in time to get an episode out for you. Depending on the trip, I may have some Taco City on the Road episodes. If we're able to stop, we're taking a route that we've taken before, so I'll have to try and find a few new places that we haven't been to, or a few places that we've hit up on this podcast that I haven't had a chance to eat at yet. So keep watching this podcast channel and following me on Instagram, and I'll keep you guys updated. And we'll talk to you next week. Thanks so much for listening. Taco City is created and produced by Rob Gokey in association with Ali Cine Productions. It's also scored by Rob Gokey. You can find Taco City on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook as Taco City Pod. And we'd love it if you'd leave us a review in the iTunes store. It's how new people can find the podcast, and it means a lot to us. So if you like us, leave us a 5-star rating and a review. We'll be back next week with a new episode and a new tacadilla.